The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:09. This is Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon. All right, so White Sox have the day off. The Cubs are in Cincinnati tonight. But if you could go to a baseball game and then walk up to a window and place your bets, like say you do at the track, would you be more likely to do it? They're talking about legalized gambling in Illinois. It's moving its way through the legislature. And that's one of the things they're talking about, actually having windows, perhaps, at the ballparks, at the United Center. We'll talk to Frank Sennett a little bit later about that, as they write about it in Cranes.
They'll do anything for money, won't they?
Well, you know,
just
Terry
anything
Savage.
Anything for money. They'll raise your taxes. They'll lure you to gambling. I had a big thing when they started the lotto 25 years ago. How could this is a tax on the poorest people? They're the ones that buy.
But
Jimmy the Greek said to me, Terry, who are you to deny somebody a $1 dream? I'll never forget that. But it's not good financial planning.
Well, I play the lotto. And
I know you do because you sent me downstairs to that nice guy in the lower
Patel,
level to buy my lotto ticket
right.
When it was. Okay, so now every time I walk through there, when I park there, I walk in, he says, you buy a lotto ticket today? So I have some, but I haven't checked them.
But it's for me, it's all about the dollar dream. I don't expect to win, but I just like having I only play the lotto.
Okay.
I don't need $250 million. I could use four. I could use five.
Just my luck, I'd win the lotto and it wouldn't be enough.
Right. That's what I mean. So four or five is good for me. But how did we get here? What were we talking
about?
Oh,
you were talking about gambling and taxes.
And I see it's coming. I'm at this point in my life, I'm like, you know, what's the use in fighting it? It's inevitable. Marijuana is going to be legalized. We're going to be betting on ball games. But when I was reading the story in Cranes today about how, you know, you could be at a window placing bets at Wrigley Field. Somehow that changed it for me a little bit. You know, it made it feel like I'm going to the track, and I don't want to feel like I'm going to the track.
You know, we saw what happened when they put those poker games in bars and restaurants. I'm not the great moralist. I think what you really need to look at is what's going on in this state and where are they going to get the money. And all of these things, like the lottery, which, by the way, never
went for education.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. We're rolling our eyes here. All these things are taxes on ordinary people because smart people can figure out ways to avoid them. We already have an outflow of residents. What were we going to do?
You just picked a fight
did
with
you
me.
Introduce
wait a minute.
Me.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You just
did
said,
you introduce who I am so that when I have this fight, people know?
I did. Terry Savage is here, terrysavage.com.
Okay,
but you just said that it's a tax on the poor people because the smart people know not to play.
Well, in general, I have to say that not only that things like the lottery or sports gambling at that level are taxes that are pretty regressive because you can understand the appeal of the dream for a dollar. But that when they start jiggering around with the tax code and saying, well, you know, if nobody over $150,000 will pay more, I don't know who our audience is. But I presume there could be a lot of young couples with kids who are both working. And that's the level at which they're taxed. Now, what's happening now is they're going to increase taxes if this graduated tax passes on everybody, it looks like, according to the ads for the people who want it to be passed, only for those people over $150,000 and certainly for those making more. Number two, you can no longer deduct these taxes and a massive amount of property tax increases. So you're making Illinois a very inhospitable state for people to put down roots and grow families.
Well, the governor
That's
would
not
say,
a good idea.
The governor would say that the taxes are going to go down for the people who are in the lower rate. And they're going to go up for the people who make more than... Was it $150,000 or $200,000?
Well, I was listening to a television commercial this morning. I thought it was $250,000.
Well,
I heard $150,000. So, but the point I'm making is, why would you want to discourage anyone from earning more, from being more productive, from opening a business, from being successful? You just don't grow an economy by penalizing the most successful people. Actually, you grow an economy. That's, you know, those opening lines we use? By cutting taxes, attracting people, this should be a tax haven in Illinois.
We have
transportation. We have great workforce. People should want to come in here, build businesses, and then you collect revenues on their success.
Well, but
not regressive levies on their income.
We have billions of dollars in pension obligations, right?
Well, that's
so that
not my fault. I've been talking about that for 20 years.
I know that, but the money's got to be raised somewhere. And I am not going to stop trying to make more money just because I get close to the higher tax bracket. Why would you? Who's? I think that's counter. So like, I think that's counterintuitive.
Think back. So it's not counterintuitive. Let me the Beatles left England because of taxes. Bjorn Borg. Remember, Sweden had a 90-something% tax rate.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me walk you through this.
Okay, walk me through.
Because
folks, you're about to hear an example of insane logic.
We're not the Beatles or Bjorn Borg. But if let's say it's $200,000, right? So if I'm approaching $200,000, I'm not going to say, well, I'm not going to try to make $210,000 just because that extra $10,000 is going to face a higher tax rate. It's not for the first $200,000. It's for the ultimate $10,000. So I don't think that it will deter people from trying to earn more money.
Well, there are so many.
Would you turn down an extra $50,000 if you had to pay?
There comes a moment when you say to yourself, is it worth it? Because, you know, we're not only we're talking about Illinois state taxes here. And you think the question is, what's the pain point at which people who are productive leave? And on the margin, people will be making that decision, not only to leave, because that's hard to uproot, but it's also on the margin decisions about whether you want to locate here. The executives, you know, that make the decisions about let's headquarter Boeing here, or let's headquarter another company, which has happened in the last few years. They may not have been hurt by rising real estate taxes on their million-dollar homes, multi-million-dollar homes and condos. But then they found out they couldn't deduct all that in those property taxes and the state income taxes. And you'd be surprised that smart people make decisions based on tax consequences.
So to sum up, what exactly are we talking about here? We started with gambling. We don't like gambling at the ballpark.
I think Jack Brickhouse would be rolling over at the thought of not going out for a Cracker Jack.
Jack could be rolling over because the Cubs have won a World Series. But
yeah, right, he's already over.
Okay, and so you don't like the
graduated income tax? I don't have an answer for you.
You don't like the graduated income tax?
I actually think, now this is sort of ridiculous, but if Illinois declared itself a tax haven for anybody who came and invested money, and I'm not talking about TIFs, I'm talking about real businesses and projects here, and we created some kind of outrageously attractive tax incentive to any new businesses or jobs or people and so forth, if someone came up with a creative thing, that then we could spur economic growth here that leads the country instead of trailing the country.
Isn't that the TIF? I mean, didn't the city give tax breaks to bring in businesses to create jobs?
Exactly. And it's done. It's worked. I mean, take a look at how vibrant Chicago is. But I think what I'm trying to say is I think we're reaching the limit. I don't think incremental taxes will ever plug the pension hole, period.
Okay.
And now, incremental taxes won't plug the federal tax deficit because it's so huge. But that's okay because the federal government can print the money. Illinois can't. So nobody's facing the reality of 130, or it's more than that now,
so
billion-dollar pension.
Your crazy logic is?
My crazy logic is if we made Illinois the tax haven of America in some possible way, that we would get more attention, more growth, and more tax revenues than by raising taxes incrementally on the margin.
We need a gazillion dollars, and the way to do that is to stop taking in money.
Well,
it's
a dream.
I'm not mocking you. I'm just putting it in a different way.
I'm just saying I think we would be much more prosperous in Illinois if we could attract people here that pay taxes instead of taxing people to the point where they're thinking of not being here.
Terry Savage is in the studio, and she has a column I read up online today at terrysavage.com about student loans and the fact that the interest rates are dropping. Well, I'm going to go for a graduate education then.
Absolutely. In economics, please.
Yes.
I know we've probably riled
drama
up the audience.
I think English literature. I'll study English literature.
Study English literature. That would be great. You're so knowledgeable anyway. Look, let's go back to personal finance. Less controversial, but at least we made people think in the first segment. There's good news, a bit of good news on student loans, and that is that the interest rates on the new student loans that will be dispersed over the summer for the 2019-2020 school year will drop by 0.5%. The most popular federal Stafford undergrad loans will be 4.53%.
Now, so this is like one of those schools
loans.
This
is where the school says you qualify for federal loans.
Okay.
Either subsidized, which means you don't pay accrue interest while you're in school, or unsubsidized, where the interest accrues, but you don't pay until after you graduate. But the rate was a little over 5%. These rates are set for the year every June based on the May 10-year Treasury note auction, and rates have actually dropped in the last 6 months. As you remember, the Fed was hiking
rates. Okay.
So, are there limits?
There are limits to what you can borrow.
Oh yeah, there's a limited amount that you can borrow on these loans. But the interesting thing is that the rates have dropped to 4.5% on undergraduate loans, parent plus loans. Okay, so you have a limited amount. I'm trying to remember, it's about $4,500 that you can get maximum, depending on whether you're a freshman or sophomore or junior or senior, and that's never enough. So parents borrow using parent plus loans. These are federal loans. You have to show credit on these. You don't have to on the Stafford loans. Good credit. The interest rate they pay has dropped also to 7.08%. That's outrageous. Now, let me point out that if you have ones that you took out last year, those carried the same rate for the life of the loan, the original
rate. Right.
So, but even 7% is outrageous, especially when you consider that this is based on what the Treasury pays when it borrows for 10 years. And the most recent auction, last about 10 days ago now, was a yield of around 2.5%, less than 2.5%. So in other words, when the federal government borrows, they pay only 2.5%. When you borrow from them, you pay 4.5% students, and you cannot default on these loans. You know they're going to get you when you
so they
social
more,
security
so they more
check
than
eventually.
Double, they more than double the
just
interest rate.
Just about double
they
the interest rate. Now, that is not what I call a government that is trying to be thoughtful about educating its population. I mean, there's all these debatable proposals about a free college education. Who would pay for that? But the point is, why would the government? And a lot of it is taken up in loan servicing costs, but the fact is, these loans aren't risky in the sense that they're going to be written off in bankruptcy, because you can't go bankrupt on a federal student loan.
So what you're saying, I never thought of it this way. So you want to have a pro-education policy.
Right.
Charge less for your...
Subsidize education.
Instead of doubling the amount of interest that you charge, make it a little close. Now, there's probably risk, right? And so it doesn't...
What's the risk? Your son, your son has student loans, right?
Yeah, my daughter
They're going to follow him, and if it's a plus loan, they're going to follow you. Now, you can do things like deferments and forbearance, and it's easier on the student loans than on the plus loans. By the way, the plus loans have an additional one-time fee of 4.25% to take it out. Now, what do parents do? Well, you don't take a home equity loan anymore, because the interest on the home equity loan, thank you tax reform, is no longer deductible if you use it for college instead of for improving your home.
Right.
That used to be a popular strategy.
So we used to take out a home equity loan, use it for college, and get a tax deduction on that.
Exactly.
Can't do that now unless we're fixing our house.
Exactly.
So what do we do as opposed to the family plus, or parents plus?
This, we talked about the Illinois pension problem as a problem. I happen to think the biggest problem on the horizon is a student loan debt at over $1.5 trillion. For years I've been saying, when your kids are freshmen and sophomore in high school, have a conversation. If you go, we have some good community colleges.
Okay,
in Illinois. I live at home for 2 years, and then you can go on to the University of Illinois.
We're about out of time. But that will happen in some houses. A lot of houses, kids are still going to go to school. So where do parents get the money if they need to get the money, other than the Parents Plus loans?
I don't know. The state can't print the money and parents can't print it. You have to go for a plus loan. But look, go to finaid.org, finaid.org, and calculate what the true repayment cost is over 10 years or 25 years if you have to stretch it out, and decide, do you really want to go through that pain? Parents are having to reschedule their retirements.
Right.
They can't retire because of these loans.
Read more at terrysavage.com. Thanks for coming by. Go enjoy your spring lunch now.
I will.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. 12:38. All right. We've talked to Chairman Zalewski on this show earlier this spring. We talked to Bennett. Was it DraftKings or FanDuel's? I've forgotten which one, but FanDuel's was down there lobbying in Springfield as we get closer and closer to a sports gambling bill. And so now it's only logical that we would talk to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business.
Hello, Steve.
What are you betting on today?
I'm betting that the the Cubs are going to be, what did somebody say, the best second place team in baseball this year? They're on a bit of a roll, it looks like.
They're playing very well. Greg Hines has a piece in Cranes about sports gambling. And I have to tell you, Frank, I mean, I accept it. I've never been someone who was in the leagues, you know, the betting leagues, the rotisserie leagues, or whatever you call it, where guys draft different players from the NBA or NFL and follow that. That's just never been my thing, a fantasy league guy. But I understand that betting is coming, and so it's fine. I get that. But when I read Greg's piece about how there could be betting windows in the ballparks, all of a sudden that was the first sort of distasteful thing that's come out of this for me. I just don't like that very much.
Yeah, so this legislative proposal that could come forth in the next week or so is based on a system now in place at the Meadowlands in the New Jersey area, New York suburbs there. And, we always like to be more like New Jersey, right?
Who wouldn't want to be like the swamp? Right, so it's one thing to be, you'll be able to sit in the ballpark and place bets on your phone. That's kind of a given, I think, or at least Zalewski said they're certainly moving toward that. And so it shouldn't be that big of a deal that there would be betting windows. In fact, who's going to go stand at a window if you could place a bet from your seat on your phone?
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be, if this comes to pass, more of a feel like you get at a horse track, people do walk up and bet. There might be, tip sheets being sold outside, that kind of thing. But the team representatives say that they want to keep their options open and that, they want a little cut of the action, 0.25%, a quarter of a point on all the betting wagered on their sports. And they also want to have the option to open up betting windows in the facilities and also ban others from opening anything competing within a five-block radius. So they want a little cordoned off slice of the pie there. It will have a different feel. I mean, the first thing you'd think of is a say it ain't so, Joe.
Right.
Shoeless Joe Jackson somewhere is rolling over in his grave.
Well, so the Cubs would, let's take the Cubs for example then. So they could contract with someone, have someone with windows in their facility, and then they would also control, of course they control most of the property anyway, but say I wanted to open up a storefront two or three blocks away to take bets on the game, they sort of have a turf where I couldn't operate within their turf.
Exactly. So there would be an exclusionary zone where they would contract with somebody and nobody else could open up within five blocks that betting window. But I don't know how much, as you say, with the phone betting coming in, how much of a big deal this ultimately ends up being. It is kind of more of a look and feel scenario. I think the biggest part of this bill is that the sports teams would get a cut of the overall wagering. They do have circuit breakers in place to keep it from influencing the game. Owners can't gamble, players, managers, members of the team, management can't gamble under this proposal.
Who needs whom in this? Who's got the power here? Because it seems like I don't know what the state needs to go to the teams for. They can either make it legal to bet on the games or not. I don't know why they need to cut the teams in.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, what the lobbying is going behind the scenes. I'm not sure, but Governor Pritzker does estimate that the state will net $200 million a year on sports gambling. So there's a lot of money out there. Maybe they're just trying to make sure everybody stays happy.
So we'll follow that. And Chairman Zalewski, like I said, was on a couple weeks ago, and I think they hope to have a vote. I think in Greg Hines's piece, they said maybe next week. So we'll see. I'm sure it'll come down to the last minute, even though best intentions are that they'll get something done before that. Speaking of last minute, the trade talks with China fell apart, and now it looks like any resumption might be weeks away. And there's a story from Joe Cahill about how ADM, which had worked very hard to sort of juggle some balls to avoid being hurt by these tariffs, sort of is out of options now. It's just sort of taking its lumps.
Yeah, probably the least happy people in Illinois about the trade talks breaking down with China would be in the ADM offices, because, as you say, they had taken some short-term measures that were largely effective, taking crops from South American partners that were not subject to the tariffs and taking the U.S. crops that they control into other markets. So, profits were down in Q1, but they thought, okay, we're on a good path. We expect this to be resolved by mid-year. Now, not so much.
They were down 41%, right? They were down 41% in the first quarter.
Yeah. So even with those moves, they were down. And now, you know, they had said in their guidance that they had expected to have this trade dispute resolved mid-year. That clearly is not on track right now.
All right. So we'll follow that as well in the supermarket of the world, right? 55% of ADM's business is overseas if they've got trouble with China. And then there's also the swine, I call it, it's the swine fever, which is hitting China, which will hurt soybean sales as well. So tough news for ADM. Frank Sennett, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Small and medium-sized businesses are still the backbone of America's economy. And by golly, these stories are just so wholesome sometimes. Casey's Foods is a community grocery store in Naperville that's in its second generation of ownership, and it's time to pass on the torch. But it isn't closing down or selling it off to a big chain. Instead, Chris Vischer, an employee of Casey's for 14 years, will be taking over. Vischer worked in management at the grocery store throughout that time and has lived in the Naperville community since 1985, continuing the store's legacy. But the legacy for the founders of Outcome Health, Shraddha Agarwal and Rishi Shah, has officially ended. Cranes reported that the two struck a deal with the current management, and now they no longer have say on the board or any stake in the company as investors. Wow, who saw that one coming? It was a rocky road for the two, but sometimes that's how business works, because there are a lot of growing pains that go into business. The exciting thing is where the company will go now. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, who knew that they could, well, I don't know, do you invent a new chocolate or do you discover a new chocolate? Amy Guth is here.
I think you do a little bit of both. Nonetheless, we have a new chocolate. It's the first time in 80 years we have something beyond white milk and dark chocolate. And it's ruby chocolate. It's adorable. It's pink. It's very cute.
So, okay, truly, there's milk chocolate, there's white chocolate, there's dark chocolate.
And that's about it. And so white chocolate came about when Nestle started making the bars in the 1930s. Okay. So it's been a while since we've had the novelty of a new chocolate on our hands.
So where does ruby chocolate come from?
There's a Swiss chocolatier called Barry Kalbot that is bringing it to the U.S. They created it about a year and a half ago-ish, and they're bringing it here. For right now, the FDA still has to approve it and let us call it chocolate. So it's Couverture for now. Ruby Couverture. French-like.
The FDA can't stop them from selling it, but they can stop them from calling it chocolate.
Correct. So there has to be a certain amount of sugar, milk solids and cacao in it for it to qualify as chocolate. So they're working that out. But in the meantime, so it's already been rolled out in Asia, and Kit Kat grabbed it really quickly. There's a lot of cool flavors of Kit Kats in other markets, particularly Asian markets. So Kit Kat jumped on that one really quickly. However, Kit Kat is a little bit different here in the U.S., so I don't see that happening.
Okay, so are there like chocolate miners who are deep under the earth who discovered this ruby chocolate, or how did it come about?
You know, all the pictures I'm looking at, it looks as if there, well, first of all, the recipe is very secret, so there could be something in the recipe process that is different. But it looks like maybe the cacao seed is just a different color. Just like we have like purple lettuce and red lettuce and things like that. It looks like it starts with a slightly different cacao, but there's something in the process in the recipe that's very, very much a guarded secret, but it's exciting.
White chocolate tastes different from milk chocolate or dark chocolate, so how does this taste match up?
Allegedly, what I was able to ascertain online, no one's shared any ruby non-chocolate.
I'm going to Switzerland. I'm taking a group to Switzerland in 4 weeks. So.
Well, I'm going to need you to smuggle some of this, the good ruby stuff back. I haven't had it, but it does seem like what I was able to tell online, it's a couple of food blogs looking at it. It does taste a little bit different, but it seems like it's very hard to classify. It seems like it might be a little bit sweeter, something like that. So we'll see.
Because in my mind, I'm associating a raspberry taste.
I know. Right, I'm kind of hoping for that.
Well, because I'm putting that color on it.
I know. I want it kind of be like strawberries and cream, like strawberry chocolate dip thing.
How will we find it when it's here? How will we know it's here?
Well, it's going to be all over the place. So there already some products are being rolled out, even though it cannot be called chocolate yet. There is a ruby cacao truffle. There's a couple of products that are starting to make it to chocolatiers. It's still being called the Couverture, but it's still being sold as is, pending that FDA approval.
But is it being sold now in the U.S.? Or it's coming soon?
It's coming soon.
Okay, and how about in Europe? Is this a big thing in Europe yet, or mostly just Asia?
It seems like it's pretty much just in Asia, but it is in other markets. And it's only, you know, a year and a half old, so I think there was a lot of refining to do.
Right.
So all that.
It's a pretty cool thing. I mean, I still haven't quite sorted that out, so it's a different bean, probably.
Probably. We'll have to see.
But it's got to be more than just a different colorization process. It's a whole new sort of...
It seems like the recipe is so guarded. I mean, that I feel like that detail has been in almost every story, that this Swiss chocolatier is keeping this recipe very secret. So
I don't know
who knew? Like, there was so much tension in the chocolate industry.
I don't want to tell you what to do, but it seems like this would be a good topic for the Daily Gist, your daily podcast.
As a matter of fact, it's in there today.
No kidding.
Voila.
Check out the Daily Gist from Crane Chicago Business. You can subscribe to it at WGNRadio.com or at Crane's, I'm sure, too. Amy Guth, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much.